I'm very excited because we have one of the most inspiring adventurers I know, Allison Levine. She was the team captain of the first USA Women's Expedition to Mount Everest. She completed the Adventure Grand Slam, which means she summited the highest peak of every continent and has skied to both the North and South Pole. She's also a New York Times bestselling author, and I consider myself very lucky to also be able to call her a friend. So, Allison, thank you so much for spending your evening with us.
Of course, I'm super excited to be here. So thanks to everybody for spending their evening or afternoon with us. I appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to connect with everybody.
So if anyone was prepared for a long and difficult period of self-isolation, it has to be you. I mean, you are used to spending months at a time in some of the most extreme conditions. So do you have any advice for the rest of us travelers to get through these times? And, you know, what are you doing to satisfy your sense of adventure while you are at home?
Okay, so I'm going to break that into two parts. First of all, as far as, you know, how do you deal with what we're going through right now? Obviously, these times are unprecedented. We've never been through anything really like this before. And I know it kind of feels overwhelming because we don't necessarily know what the future is going to look like. You know, we don't know what next year is going to look like. We don't know what next month is going to look like. We don't really even know what tomorrow is going to look like. So for me, the way to really think about this is to just focus on the things you can control and don't worry about the things that are out of your control. And then when things start to feel overwhelming, for me, it helps to break everything down into much more manageable parts. So when I feel like I have something like things just feel like too much, I just break things down into smaller steps so that they feel more doable. So when I wake up every day, you know, I'm not thinking about like climbing Mount Everest today. I'm just thinking about how am I going to get to base camp today, right? Let's get to base camp. Just take things one step at a time. So for me, when you break things down into more manageable steps, you feel like you're accomplishing something. And I think that's really important right now because we don't know when this is going to end. So I think it just feels really good when you feel like every day you've accomplished something. So I break things down into small parts. And then the other thing I do every day, the first thing when I get out of bed is I do push-ups in the morning. And I think push-ups are great. So first of all, for those of you who think you can't do push-ups, you can just start with one. Like everyone can do one push-up. If you have to drop to your knees, just drop to your knees and start there. But what I like about this is that when you start doing them every morning, you get better at them and you get stronger. So it's good for you physically because the push-ups engage so many different muscle groups. But psychologically, it's good too because you can see your progress. You can feel your progress as you're getting stronger. And I think that's really important right now because we don't know when this is going to end. So when you feel like you're making progress with something, when you feel like you're getting better at something, and this is something you can do that helps your body and your mind. So for me, like every day I get up and I try to do push-ups and I can see that I'm getting better and that I'm getting stronger. So that's part one of the answer. Part two, you can still have adventure at home. So for me, like my birthday was a few weeks ago and we were planning to go camping and we still went camping, but we just pitched a tent in the backyard and we went camping in the backyard. And so that was kind of fun. I mean, you can create your own adventures just right in your own home. The other thing we do is, I don't know if you guys played this game when you were younger, but that game, The Floor is Lava, where you pretend the floor is lava and you have to, my husband posted this on Facebook, me doing it, but you go like, hey, the floor is lava. And then you're not allowed to touch the floor and you have to get around your house without touching the floor. So you're jumping from like your sofa to your countertop to a chair. Like you have to position all your furniture so you can get around, like around a room or around a couple of rooms without touching the floor. So it's kind of challenging. And so we play The Floor is Lava. We camp in the backyard. I mean, you guys, there's so much fear and anxiety in the world right now that I think if you can make it a little bit fun, it helps. It really does help.
So I did see that video of you, but I had no context on
of what it was.
And I just saw you. I was like, I guess, yeah.
Like,
I
mean, why is she walking across the counter and jumping off the back of the sofa?
Like, I guess she really misses climbing mountains. yeah, no, I can completely resonate with what you're saying. And just, you know, having two little kids, like, I feel like it has made me so much more intentional about just doing, I mean, yeah. You know, my three-year-old doesn't really know like whether we're in Montenegro or whether we're two neighborhoods over or on the roof. And I mean, he talks about it a lot, so maybe he does know, but it's just made me a lot more like instead of distracting that intention by the destination, it's just making it more of a mindset and having that curiosity and everything.
Yeah. It's kind of fun to be creative and figure out how to have adventure in your own home and in your own backyard. And you can do it if you have a sense of creativity. You don't have to go anywhere and find adventure.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've always been really fascinated by looking at your pictures and reading your book and, you know, watching some of your interviews, it's that, you know, I've traveled to a lot of places. So like, I feel like I can kind of mentally picture what a lot of places are like. And, you know, most of the people listening are frequent travelers. We have several people in the community who have been to every country in the world. But I think it's safe to say that like almost none of us have stood at the North or South Pole or have stood on the summit of, you know, some of the highest and most iconic peaks in the world. So one question I've just like always been really curious about is like, what's it actually like there? And like, can you give us a sense of how does it look? How does it feel?
Okay. I'll show you what Antarctica looks like. This looks like this. It is so this continent is 5.5 million square miles of solid ice. So that continent is 98% ice, 2% rock. And part of what is so challenging about being there, so we did a 600-mile ski traverse from the edge of the continent all the way to the South Pole. And what was so challenging is that when you look around, you don't really see landmarks, right? It's you just see mostly ice. And when the clouds come in, it's hard to see where the ground stops and where the sky starts. It just looks like white all around you. So you look behind you and you can't see how far you've come. And you look ahead of you and you can't see how far you have to go because there's no landmarks to look at. And so it kind of reminds me of what we're going through right now. Like we don't know where the end of this is, but you just keep going, right? You just put one foot in front of the other and keep going and you know you're going to get there. So that was what was really challenging about Antarctica. The North Pole, super challenging because it's up at the Arctic Circle in the middle of all this Arctic ice. And the hardest part about that is that you ski for 12 or 15 hours, you're exhausted, you pitch your tent, you cook your dinner, you fall into your sleeping bag, and you know, wake up in the morning and you've drifted further away than you were the day before when you started. So not only did you not make any progress, but you erased your progress. So that's frustrating about the North Pole. But as far as what it looks like, I mean, again, it just looks like flat ice everywhere. And then even being on the top of Everest, we were up there in a whiteout. So, you know, that looked like this too. So that's the hard part. And that's why it's so important to really focus on the journey. I know it's kind of cliche because everyone says, oh, it's all about the journey. But it really is, because if you get to the top of Mount Everest and you can't see anything, then you're just going to be like, shit, all that work. And like, I don't even have a good view. Right. So you have to really be enjoying the process of getting there instead of just that moment at the South Pole or the North Pole or the moment on top of the mountain, because you're just going to be there for a few minutes. And really, I think what makes the trip worthwhile are the lessons you learn along the way, like when you're fighting like hell to get up there. So for me, what's in my mind isn't necessarily like what it's like to be at the South Pole or on the top of Everest or the North Pole. For me, it's the visions of the journey of getting there and the fight along the way. That's really, for me, what I see when I remember these trips.
So I can completely get how, you know, 10 feet from the exact South Pole is probably no different than, you know, 100 feet or a mile away. Yeah. But how does it feel when you're there? Like there has to be some sort of, and you've talked about a lot of this, like with, you know, getting up to Everest is only halfway. You have to get back down. But, you know, there's still a sense of like you've been working for, you know, which we'll get into this, but I have no idea how, like you've been training for so long, you know, or even, you know, decades and when for everything concluded. And then you've been on like maybe a 2-month expedition and you get to the top and it does look the same or it looks all completely white. But does it feel any different than the like, you know, than an hour sure. before when you were close to it?
Yes. Well, it does. And what, for me, what I think about are the people that stood there before me. Mm. That's what I really start thinking about, is all the people that have stood on this spot and what they went through to get here. So for example, getting to the South Pole, many of you guys might know this story, but the Amundsen's, you know, Roald Amundsen, Robert F. Scott, the race to the South Pole, mm-hmm. because they both wanted to be the first people to get to the South Pole, the Norwegians versus the Brits, right? And the Norwegian team got there first. They beat Robert F. Scott's team by, I don't know, 33 or 34 days. And so when the British team got there and they saw the Norwegian flag flapping in the wind at the South Pole, they were so crushed. And the team actually ended up dying on the return trip, just 11 miles from a depot of food and supplies that could have saved their lives. But I feel like they focused so much on the goal of being the first to the South Pole that when they didn't achieve that goal, they just lost their will to continue. And so I always think about all the people that have stood in that spot before me and what they went through and the sacrifices of those true, like the true first early explorers. But that also always, you know, reminds me that it's what you mentioned, the top of Everest is only the halfway point. Getting to the South Pole is great, but you have to get yourself back alive, because the number one goal of any expedition, number one goal, come back alive. That is always the goal. The goal is never get to the South Pole or the North Pole or get to the top of Everest. The goal is always come back alive.
Yeah. It's crazy how psychological it is. You know, like I've talked to friends who've like completed like special operations training, like SEER school. And one of the things they said is like just how much you get mentally screwed with. Like, you know, you might have to go on, you know, a long ruck march and weird conditions, and everyone is tough enough to do it. But where everyone or a ton of people drop is when they say, this is a 25-mile march. And at 25, you say, do two more. Then people are like, I'm done. But when you say it's 27, people are tough enough to like have that endpoint and work towards it.
Yeah. You know, I've had that, like, always doubts go through my mind sometimes when I feel like something's overwhelming. Like even just getting from the high camp on Everest at 26,000 feet to the summit at 29,035 feet. So it's more than 3,000 vertical feet you have to cover, and you're taking five breaths for every step because you're climbing up in the death zone and you're moving really slowly. And I have those doubts of, I am not going to be fast enough. I am not going to be strong enough. And then you realize you don't have to be the fastest and the strongest. You just have to put one foot in front of the other. That's how you get there, is you just have to be the most relentless, right? Yeah. Not the fastest, not the strongest, but the most relentless. And that's how you get to the top of a mountain.
So many good quotes and metaphors with life. I think your comment about, you know, the race to throw a flag somewhere, I think is a really good segue to something that's just been on my mind a lot lately. And, you know, everyone we talk to, I usually ask this question in some degree, but like, travel is such a force for good in the world. But like, you know, one of the things I talk a lot about is how it also started to create significant harm to the environment, to destinations, and to the quality of life of many locals. And I'm really curious for your perspective, because Mount Everest has been one of the poster children for how humans can really ruin something. Yeah. So, you know, one potential silver lining in this lockdown is that we have the opportunity as a community and an industry to just hit the pause button and globally, like, just reset how we do things. So, you know, when we do eventually return to travel, and especially from, you know, your perspective as it applies to some of the most ultimate experiences that you're used to, what is your advice for how we get it right? You know, both to improve our own experience and preserve what we love about travel and destinations for generations to come.
So I think there's a lot of different things that could help with this. So obviously, you know, most people know about the leave no trace philosophy, right? You don't want to leave anything behind. But sometimes I find that, and obviously as foreigners, as, you know, when we go to another country, we want to make sure that we take care of the environment, we clean up after ourselves, and we don't leave anything behind. But one thing I've noticed too is that sometimes the locals don't realize how much damage they can do by just throwing trash away. So For example, I remember the first time I went to the Ruwenzori Mountains, which are these mountains that border Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. All the local guides and porters were throwing their trash all along the route the whole way. And I just stopped and I was like, hang on. And I would pick it up and explain it to them. And to them, they honestly, like, it just didn't occur to them that they, I know that we're thinking, how could it not occur to you to not throw trash on the trail?
I mean, if you didn't go to elementary school where everyone shamed you as being a litter bug, you just might not learn that lesson.
No, it just didn't occur to them that the cumulative effect of this is quite serious. And so pointing out to them, hey, like I'd pick up their trash and be like, hey. But the other thing is when they would see, like, you don't have to shame them. Of course, you can try to help educate them. But like when I go on a trip, I always try to schedule a little bit of extra time for cleanup. And what if we all did that? What if we all scheduled an extra day for cleanup duties wherever we were going? Because when the locals see the foreigners doing that, that's when it registers to them how important it is. I mean, I know that those articles came out about all the trash on Mount Everest, but if you read through the whole article and got to the bottom, it talked about how the majority of that trash was actually in the local villages mm-hmm. surrounding Mount Everest. So that's a problem as well. So it's not just about cleaning up the trash on Mount Everest. It's how do you really instill that sense of responsibility into the local people so that they know to pick up the trash that they are leaving as well, just in their everyday lives. And so I think it's going to have to be a joint effort of foreigners and locals and everybody putting, like really putting effort into it and making it like part of their trip itinerary. Like, how cool would it be if everybody had one extra day just to go pick up trash? How cool would it be for foreigners to go grab some local school kids in Uganda or whatever country you're going to and spend a day, you know, at a school talking about your home country and teaching the kids, you know, about what it's like to live wherever you live. And then you take everybody out and you together spend a day cleaning up trash. I think that would be good for the kids in the local countries. It's good for us. You know, it's a way we can give back and clean up the community. So we tried to do that when we went to Uganda too, is visit as many schools as we could. And I think building school visits into your itinerary is very, it's really rewarding and it's fun to go meet the kids and the teachers and, you know, experience what they experience in their classrooms because they're really different from ours. But if you can tie that into a cleanup day, you know, everybody wins.
That's great. I mean, it's even if you just do something small that leaves each place slightly better than you found it.
Yeah.
Because
when they see your enthusiasm, when other people see your enthusiasm for the Leave No Trace philosophy and how you can kind of make it into a fun game. You can kind of make it into a challenge and whoever picks up the most trash, you know, wins. And you can make it into a fun kind of contest even to get locals involved. And so I think that it's going to take everybody. It's going to take everybody. And, you know, again, Mount Everest is in the news about trash all the time, but they do offer an incentive to Sherpas to bring trash down. And they do have strict fines in place for anyone that leaves trash behind. And I have noticed that the mountain, you know, I thought it actually looked pretty good trash wise when I was there, but because of the earthquake a few years ago, a lot of equipment and gear and supplies got buried up at the higher camps. And then when things melted out the following year, it just looked like there was a bunch of trash left behind. So unfortunately with an avalanche situation, there's not really anything, you know, with the earthquake in Nepal that triggered the avalanche that there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
Except for get it the following year, right? Go back and get it the following season.
Yeah. You know, I've not done any hiking like you have or trekking like you have, but you know, one of the interesting things when I climbed up Mount Sinai and slept on the top of Mount Sinai one day, and one of the things that the locals were talking about is how they thought one of the worst things that the government did is they installed trash cans along the trail, and what they were saying is like everyone was pushing to be more environmental, so the government came in and dropped in trash cans, and he said, before, all the foreigners would come and take back everything they brought up. Now that they're trash cans, they feel just completely comfortable leaving trash in the trash can because it seems logical.
Yeah.
And they're like, but the thing they don't understand, like this is like, no one comes to empty those trash. They just trash like cans, fill yeah. up and then blow over. So yeah, it's just like, it's a really interesting perspective.
Well, one thing I noticed last summer, I had to speak at a meeting in Tokyo. That city is so clean and there's no trash cans everywhere. I mean, everywhere you look, it's clean. There's no trash anywhere. And there's no trash cans. I looked all over the place for a trash can, couldn't find them. I mean,
it's like people take the leave nothing on the trail mentality to just normal life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they must take all their trash home because we did not see one speck of trash anywhere and we did not see one single trash can.
Wow. So, all right. You know a lot about how a great plan can get completely turned upside down by a sudden change of events. It's happened to you many times on a mountain. So when we look at everything going on in the world in a very, fast period of time, like people have, within weeks, like it went from being normal to people having lost loved ones, once thriving businesses are likely to go bankrupt and people have lost what they thought were stable jobs. People have had to cancel weddings and cancel trips of a lifetime they saved for. I mean, I could keep going, but this pandemic is causing, massive disruption to nearly everyone's plan that they had for themselves at the beginning of the year. So in light of that, like what lessons from your expeditions would you give to people during these times?
Well, the great philosopher Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And it's so true. I mean, planning is so important, right? Planning keeps you organized, keeps you on track. Planning's great. But what you have to remember is that when you are in these environments that are constantly shifting and changing, whatever plan you came up with, whether it was last year, last month, last week, even this morning, your plan is outdated as soon as it's finished when you're in these environments, right, that shift around quite a bit. So yes, plan, but you can't be hell-bent on sticking to your plan no matter what. You want to be much more focused on executing based on what is going on at the time. And so for me, I just had to embrace the mentality that I don't know, again, what next week's going to look like, next month, next year, tomorrow, but you just have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with not knowing. And, look, everyone on this call probably has a huge sense of adventure, right? We all embrace adventure. You have to look at this as an adventure. It's okay to not know what tomorrow is going to bring. So I always have that mentality of, you might have a plan to go to the summit of the mountain on a certain day, but the weather is going to change. Your health is going to change. Maybe you have a problem with gear, your equipment, your oxygen tank, whatever. I mean, all these things can affect your climb and you cannot control any of it. So you just have to be able to take action and make shifts in your life and just understand that you don't have to fear the unknown. You don't have to fear the unknown. And fear, by the way, because I know there's a lot of fear out there right now. There is. I mean, because there's a lot of scary stuff going on. No question. But you can use fear to your advantage. So remember, fear is just a normal human emotion. Fear is only dangerous when it paralyzes you. Right. So just continue to move forward, continue to take action. Do not be paralyzed based on fear. So I always say, fear is okay. Complacency is what puts you at risk. And by the way, this is one thing I really want people to remember. If you remember nothing else from this time, from my time talking to you on this screen, please remember this. You can be scared and brave at the same time. You can be scared and brave at the same time. Don't beat yourself up for feeling scared. That's okay. It's just a normal human emotion. Just don't let it paralyze you. Just keep going, keep moving. Wake up every day and realize you got this. Just put one foot in front of the other and you got this.
Wow. Yeah, no, that is great advice. And it's an interesting parallel because I always tell people with travel,
no. 1 second. I lost my audio somehow. Give me a second here. Let's see.
We can hear you.
What the heck? Hang on. Let me just make a little. I don't know. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. Great.
I can't hear you. What's going on? Hang on. Give me a second.
Take your time.
These live things. Okay, hang on here. I'm going to have to put speakers. Yo, just speaker. Yikes. Okay. All right. Back at ya.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you now. I don't know what happened there. My system like made a shift on me. Sorry about that.
Hey, I mean, it could not have been better timing about how things, your plan changing. So I feel like that's almost like Zoom planted. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such great advice. You know, one of the things I always tell people with their, you know, with just normal travel is that, you know, no good travel story has ever happened based on things going like you intended. Like it always happens when like something goes crazy and something derails. And that's like the moments you come back and you tell people about and you learn and grow from. And it's so true that applies to your life. And like, that doesn't mean that like these aren't really difficult times or that people are experiencing, you know, a wide range of suffering. Like most people are experiencing some negative suffering, some the ultimate suffering, some, you know, casual light inconveniences, but those are the types of things that you'll look back and have learned and grown the most.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, I think it's kind of fun once you figure out that you don't have to know what's coming around every corner. If you just know you can deal with whatever, you know, whatever curveball is thrown your way, just know you're going to take a swing at it. You're going to be okay. And so it's kind of fun to not know, I think. And as you said, like the best adventure stories always come from the random things that happen that you never expected or the places that you ended up going to that weren't necessarily in your initial itinerary.
Yeah, you have a real knack for coming up with these learnings based on your travels and coming up with learnings that are easily transferable to business or life or military or so family, so many other things. So I am curious about, you know, like what we were just talking about, like what is your process of self-reflection? Like when you're trekking up a mountain, do you immediately something happens and then, you know, on the next, you know, hour, you're like, that was a really good lesson that I'll take with me? Or is it something that happens like much later in hindsight?
So it happens much later in hindsight, definitely, because usually in the moment, I'm always thinking about how I'm going to get out of this jam or how I'm going to get down. Or, you know, people say like, what were you thinking about when you got to the summit of Mount Everest? Like what was going through your head? And it was, oh my God, how am I going to get, you know, how am I going to get down? That's really what I was thinking about. And so it's usually not until after. And it's almost like when we have hardship in our life, and you know, you might wonder, why is this happening to me? Why am I going through this? People ask themselves those questions. You always get the answer down the road. You do. And you look back and you go, oh, that's why I went through that. That's why that happened to me. And you get clarity later on. And for me, I'm so, you know, trying to be in the moment and live in the moment and react in the moment that I'm not really thinking about what I'm learning from it in the moment. That usually happens when I get back down to camp and I'm laying in my tent in my sleeping bag and I'm just going over the whole day, what went right, what went right, what went wrong, what would I have done differently had the circumstances been a little bit different?
Yeah. So, you know, as, you know, speaking of being in the moment, like one of the things that I would be curious to get your take on as travelers, like we have so much anticipation for our next trip. You know, we're excited for it. We plan it. Then we go and we have an incredible, often life-changing experience. And then when we return, like the post-trip blues are a very common thing. But this has to be so much more magnified for you because your preparation and training is much longer, much more intense. You pour so much of yourself into each mission and you accomplish these feats with a team that I'm sure feels like family when you're done. So what's it like for you after you are done with one of your big expeditions? And do you have any advice for just, you know, the average traveler to beat the post-trip blues?
Well, okay. So first of all, I always tell people do not make any major life decisions either when you're on one of these trips or right when you get back, because first of all, I mean, it depending on where you are, but in these remote extreme environments, emotions are very much heightened. And things that you normally kind of like, you love. And things that annoy you a little bit, you hate. They drive you crazy. And so your mind, your emotions work differently. Your mind works differently when you're in these remote extreme places. And I remember when I got back from Mount Everest, and someone I didn't know at the time had posted a picture of the Hillary Step. And it was a picture of me climbing the Hillary Step. And I knew it was me because I had pink duct tape on my ice axe. And this backpack. And so I recognized the backpack and the pink ice axe. So I thought, that's me. So I tracked the guy down. I said, could I get a picture, or could I get a copy of that picture? Because that's me in the middle of the Hillary Step, like climbing up it. And so I met this guy. So we were exchanging emails and just getting to know each other. And I said, I'm sorry I didn't meet you on the mountain. And he said, oh, my wife and I were there. And I said, okay, well, I hope I get to meet you and your wife someday. And he said, oh, you know, sadly, we got divorced, you know, right after the trip. And I said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And he said, to this day, I don't even really know why. And so emotions, like, people make weird decisions. And I remember being on Everest and trekking into base camp with people that were saying, yeah, I've been dating this person for a really long time. I really feel like I need to end it. It's not going anywhere. And like 2 weeks in, they're on the sat phone proposing. So I'm like, wait a minute. So it does do weird things to your brain. So I always tell people, like, wait until you come back and kind of reemerge into normal life, whatever that looks like, before you make any big decisions. But also for me, the other thing I learned is that, and it goes back to putting the importance, like, this is what helps me with the post-trip blues, because I do still get them very much. But what helps me with them is remembering that it is about the journey. And so, for example, in 2002, when I was the team captain for the first American Women's Everest expedition, we didn't make it. We got turned back from the summit 275 feet in bad weather. And we were sponsored by the Ford Motor Company. We had, you know, this big sponsor. We had all this media coverage. You know, CNN's doing live updates from the mountain. We did the whole morning show circuit before we left for the mountain. The evening news anchors interviewed us. 450 media outlets followed our climb. And then we missed the top by that much. So you have to come back from the trip. And everyone's like, oh, welcome back. Oh, you know, and I'm like, oh, no, you know, it's okay. It was an amazing climb. I know, but, you know, to work that hard and be on the mountain for that long and to get that close and not make it, like, that's probably going to haunt you for the rest of your life. And I'm like, no, only when people like you say stuff like that. So it really, like, I learned that I can't put so much, let my emotions get so wrapped up in a particular goal for the trip. And, you know, so I'm like, oh, now it's back. The trip is over. You know, you feel like it's a downer, right? The trip's, but what I think about is, wait a minute, all those lessons I learned from the trip, all those great experiences, like, I'm going to start to implement some of those lessons into my regular life. So I feel like it's a way that the trip is always with me. And even, like I said, when I feel overwhelmed and I break something down into smaller parts, so I feel like I can tackle it more easily, I feel like I'm reliving a bit of that trip. So I feel like your trip is never over. Your adventure is never over. You can take it with you, and you're going to take it with you on all your future adventures as well. So for me, you know, I come back, I just try to say, this is now an opportunity for me to use all the great lessons I learned during this adventure. And then, of course, starting to plan your next adventure, I think, helps with the post-trip blues as well. So never too soon to start planning the next one.
That's great. Yeah, no, that I did find a lot of the commentary around that really fascinating. So did you have, when you were coming down, like, did you feel the disappointment? Or did you feel like, you know, you were on that mountain for what, like 2 months?
2 months.
And so a couple hundred feet is... like, to your point, like, it's not going to look any different. Like, it's really, you know, a somewhat arbitrary, like, milestone. But when you came back, did you, like, how did you feel versus, like, so how much of it was internal versus external pressure?
Well, you know, that? I'll say that part of it was just feeling like maybe like that we disappointed people because we had, you know, all this media coverage and, you know, this Discovery Channel was doing live updates. They didn't call it a blog at the time. I don't think that term had been coined back in 2002 yet. I can't remember, but they called it the web, you know, follow along online. So they were blogging and doing trip updates every day. So we had this big following and then we got back and we were the butt of Jay Leno's opening monologue joke. And how does that feel? And so you feel like all these people are cheering you on. You feel like you disappointed them. I felt like I disappointed people that were following the trip. I felt like I disappointed Ford, our sponsor. I felt like we just disappointed so many people. So it was, that part was hard for me to get past and just also feeling like, am I ever going to get another sponsor again? Because we didn't make it. And so then when I went back 8 years later and I made it to the summit and I was thinking it was going to be this amazing, like, aha moment. I did it. Yes, I finally got here 8 years later after everything I went through. And then I realized I got to the top of the mountain and I thought, okay, this is just not that big of a deal. I'm just standing on a big pile of rock and ice. And standing on a big pile of rock and ice does not change you and does not change the world. And so I love your point about you're 275 feet away. Is it really that different? For me, I say no, it wasn't that different. You know, standing on top of a pile of rock and ice doesn't change the world. You know what does change the world? Lots of other stuff. Technology, innovation, advances in healthcare, raising kind, compassionate children that will contribute to their community. That changes the world. You know what else really changes the world? It's just a few kind words of support to somebody who's struggling. And I mean, make no mistake, people are struggling right now. People are struggling left and right. So you guys, one thing I really want to say to everybody, do not underestimate the power of a few kind words of support, because a few kind words to someone who's having a tough time can completely change the outcome of a situation. And I would say even, I mean, it sounds dramatic, but it could completely change somebody's life. And even the best, strongest climbers have a bad day on the mountain. So don't think that just because someone you know is typically very strong-willed, you know, has just that sense of resilience, don't think that they don't need a few words of encouragement every now and then. So, I mean, to me, all that stuff is so much more important than just standing on top of a mountain. And for me, it was the lessons I learned along the way that were going to help me going forward. Like all the lessons I learned when I was fighting like hell to get up to the summit, like that's the stuff for me that made a difference. That's the stuff for me that was life-changing, right? Learning about my risk tolerance, learning about, you know, like what it felt like to get the living snot kicked out of me high up on that summit ridge in a storm and learning that I could keep going. And so it built in me this sense of resilience. So now when I feel like I'm getting the snot kicked out of me doing something else, I'm like, I have felt like this before and I kept going and I just put one foot in front of the other. And even when I felt like I was weak or I was slow, it didn't matter because I kept going and I got there. And I mean, you guys, we're all going to get to the end of this pandemic. We're going to get there together. We're going to put one foot in front of the other and we're going to freaking get there. We are.
You know what else changes the world? A really powerful, inspirational message that someone needs to hear. And if you would have came back from Everest and being like, look at me, I'm a badass, I climbed another mountain, I don't think you would have had in your books, in your keynote speeches, and a lot of what you've done, I don't think you would have had the same inspirational message that I know has resonated with so many people. So it's also fascinating to think that, like, you being open and vulnerable and transparent about, you know, what many would call like your failure, probably had way more impact on people's lives than, and especially when you think about like someone like you, so many people are just intimidated and they're just like, look, I understand how that person can do a lot of things and I might not be that person. So just to have, just to see like you be open about like something that didn't work well and how you overcame that and learned lessons from it, I think is a huge inspiration to other people.
I'll say if anyone ever feels intimidated by me, which I can't imagine that you would, read chapter 6 of my book, because like when you look at my bio, oh, adventure grand slam, skied 600 miles across Antarctica to the South Pole. There's stories behind this. Let me tell you. My South Pole expedition, I trained as hard as I possibly could. I was the slowest, weakest person on my team because I'm small. So I'm 5'4", about 112 pounds. You have to drag a 150 pound sled across 600 miles of Antarctic ice. And my teammates who were, you know, 6'4", 230 pounds, right? A foot taller than me, twice my weight. They could drag the sled faster and more efficiently than I could. So I was the slowest, weakest person on the team. My teammates had to take weight out of my sled so that I could keep up with them. And that just crushed me because I felt like I am the worst person on this team. I trained so hard and I still cannot keep up with my teammates. And I just felt like I bet they regret, allowing me to be part of this team. And I bet nobody wants me here. But I overheard our team leader, this amazing Australian named Eric Phillips. I overheard him talking to my teammate, George, and they were talking about how much smaller I was. And they said, poor Allison, she's really struggling with the weight of her sled. I know, she's so much smaller than everybody else. There's just no way. So they, in this really sneaky way, they took weight out of my sled. They took weight out of my sled, lightened my load, made their sleds heavier, made their jobs harder, just so that I could keep up with them. And for me, it was such an amazing message about teamwork and leadership and making everybody feel like they're a valuable member of the team. And so my way of paying these guys back, like I figured out a way to play to my strength, which is I'm short to the ground. So I could use a snow shovel. So you ski for 12, 15 hours, you set up your tent, and then you're not done. You have to build a snow barricade around your tent to protect it from the elements. Well, what I noticed was these tall guys, 6'3", 6'4", trying to bend over and use a short snow shovel to dig up the snow bricks to make the snow barricade around their tent. They were wrenching their backs and they were in a lot of pain. Well, I'm shorter to the ground, so I can use the snow shovel a lot more easily. So that next night after they took the weight out of my sled, I was like, hey, you guys, pass me the shovel. Like, I'll build the snow barricade around your tent. And they were like, you're going to do what? And I said, yeah, I want to build the snow barricade around your tent. Give me the shovel. And Eric, our leader, is like, why do you want to do that? I'm like, I really love to shovel snow. And I grew up in Phoenix and I never got to do that. And so he was like, okay, you know, he gave me the shovel. And then I shoveled the snow as often as I could. I became the best damn snow barricade maker on the team. And it was just a great lesson to me too, about if you are so focused on comparing yourself to other people in areas where they are strong, you may never uncover what makes you truly strong and what allows you to really shine. And for me, I was so focused on, I can't haul this sled as fast as my bigger teammates. Oh my God, I'm worthless. No one wants me here. And then I figured out, okay, wait, I can shovel snow. And that was my area of strength. And then, you know, it takes all kinds of talents to make a team work. It really does. And so, yeah, you know, I did complete the Adventure Grand Slam, but only because I had amazing team leaders, because I had amazing teammates that were willing to help me, like literally help carry my weight so that I could make it to the South Pole.
What a great reminder to lean into your strengths instead of focusing on the weaknesses. And I love how you and the team did it in a way. I think it's very natural to say, hey, Allison, like you're smaller, like let us carry weight. And you being like, okay, well, let me do this for you because I'm shorter. But I love how you did it in such a sneaky way. Like, you know, you almost, yeah, you didn't make them feel like you were paying them back or hooking them up. And
you know what they did when they took the weight out of my sled? They pretended like they were weighing they didn't say like, hey, we see you're struggling. Like, we'll help you out. We'll take a little weight out so you can be faster. Right.
Which is would be a little bit demoralizing, you know?
Totally. I already felt terrible. It would have made me feel even worse. Like, imagine, you know, the head of HR posting your crappy performance review on the front of the fridge, you know, in the break room at work, like for everybody to see. Like, everybody already knew I was not doing well. And so what Eric and George did is Eric got out of the tent before we started skiing one morning and he said, hey, you guys, before we start skiing, I just want to weigh everybody's sleds and I want to make sure that they're all about even. George, help me out. Grab the end of that sled. Let's weigh it. And so they each would pick up the end of this big, you know, massive 150-pound sled. And they started weighing. They were like, oh, yeah, this sled feels good. Oh, yeah, this sled feels good. And then they picked up, they each picked up the end of my sled, and they're like, oh, my God. They drop it on the ground. They pick it up 6 inches. They drop it simultaneously. They're like, oh, my God, what is in this sled? You have the heaviest sled of any person on our team. This is crazy. Why are you carrying so much weight? We got to make this a little more even. And Eric's like, George, you take our food back. I'll take our fuel canisters. And they, that's how they offloaded weight. And I knew what they were doing because I overheard them talking about it the night before. So they thought they were being really sneaky, but I overheard them. So I knew what they were doing. And then, so that's why I was like, I have to pay them back. I have to pay them back. But I'll tell you a funny thing. At the end of the trip, Eric was asking all of us what we were going to remember most about the trip. And I asked him the same question. I said, what are you going to remember most? And he said, I think how much crazy Allison likes to shovel snow. And I said, are you kidding me? I freaking hate to shovel snow. The only reason I was shoveling snow was because I overheard you talking in your tent about taking the weight out of my sled. And he said, oh, you heard that? And I said, yeah, plus you guys are the crappiest actors. Like, oh, this sled is so heavy, you know. And so, but again, like, I really want people to remember that your weakness does not determine your value. Your weakness does not determine your value. It doesn't. I mean, there's so many ways to contribute to a team besides just like brute strength.
Yeah. Wow. And also just such a good reminder to be like, so many of those things have a compounding reciprocal effect. So like your act of kindness then gets like magnified in return and creates a culture of just where everyone wants to give as opposed to everyone wanting to take. That's a really cool story.
The other thing is, this is something to think about too during these difficult times, is Eric sent me a note after the trip and he said, you know, he said, I would do another trip with you anytime. He said, there were days, and I was like, are you kidding? Like, I was the worst, crappiest, weakest person. And he said, don't kid yourself. He said, there were days when you were stronger than all of us. He said, your attitude, you know, your positive attitude, your sense of humor, your willingness to help, he said, that was unwavering. And he said, that was so valuable to us. And to me, I didn't see those things as valuable. I'm like, positive attitude, sense of humor, like, that's just my personality. That's not anything like valuable. Right, and right. He saw it as something of value. He saw it as something that helped the team. And I didn't see it that way, but he did. So just a reminder that sometimes what we have to give may not seem that big to us, but to other people, it really is of tremendous value. And our brains contain these things called mirror neurons. And these mirror neurons actually mimic the emotions of the people around us. So that's why that saying, enthusiasm is contagious. That's a real thing. There's science behind that. You can Google it. Like, don't Google it right now because I'm still talking. But but when you have time, you can Google it. When you have a positive attitude and you're upbeat and happy, that reflects on the rest of the team. And those mirror neurons in their brains, your teammates' brains, pick up on that. And it makes other people happier, right? And they show that happier teams perform at a higher level. So being an upbeat, positive person really does add value to your team. And in, like I said, in times like this, you never know who's struggling, or just, you know, if you can just share a few positive words and a few kind words of support, it can really make a difference.
That's amazing. So I only have a couple more questions. Everyone, I see a lot of Q&A and I see a lot of questions being dropped in the chat. So we will, if you have any questions for Allison, please drop them in the Q&A so Andy doesn't miss them. I just have a couple more questions. I could talk to you for hours, Allison, but I'll be respectful of your time. What advice do you have for the amateur adventurer that wants to start incorporating some big treks into their travels? You know, of course, once it's safe to travel again, how do you recommend, you know, picking where to go, how to properly prepare, and also, you know, how to do the trek in a socially responsible way with, you know, who you hire and how you actually go up the mountain?
Yeah. So the very first trek I ever did, the very first mountain I ever went to was Kilimanjaro. And I'm sure there's a lot of people watching that have been there. It's such an amazing experience. But I planned to go there with two girlfriends. And 2 weeks before the trip, they decided that they wanted to go to Club Med in Cancun instead. And so But I grew up in Arizona, so going to warm weather wasn't a big deal to me. I wanted to do something I wouldn't have been able to do before because, so long story short, so I've had 3 heart surgeries. So I had one when I was 17. I had one when I turned 30. So about 18 months after my second heart surgery, this light bulb went on in my head and I thought, okay, I want to go do something I wouldn't have been able to do before when I was still 6. So when my girlfriends canceled on this trip, I thought, well, I'm still going to go to Kilimanjaro because I want to do something different. And I thought, initially I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't go because I don't have anyone to go with. But then I realized that I should not postpone my dreams until they are convenient for somebody else. And neither should you guys. Do not postpone your dreams until they are convenient for somebody else. So even if you don't have somebody to travel with, and I have a feeling that most of the people watching today do not care about having someone to travel with, but some people do. Some people feel like if they don't have a partner in crime, they don't want to go. Solo traveling, I think, is a blast. I've done a ton of that. And it forces you to meet all kinds of people, you know, interesting people, the locals, other travelers. But there's tons of adventure companies that you can sign on with that that do trips, you know, where you can sign on and you'll be part of a group. You will have a team. There's also some adventure philanthropy companies out there that I highly recommend where you go and you build an orphanage and then you climb Kilimanjaro or something like that. So there's trips that are set up, and you guys can feel free to reach out to me if you want recommendations, but there's trips that are set up where you can actually integrate philanthropy with your adventure. They're, you know, they call it adventure philanthropy. And I think that's a really cool way to do things.
That's great. We, my wife and I were supposed to climb Kilimanjaro, and it wasn't convenient for our now son who was created. So he was, she got pregnant. And so we had to cancel the trip. And it, you know, it's true to my wife, Stephanie, like she was still researching, like, oh yeah, is this possible? How can I do this? Like while pregnant, I'm like,
I need to give birth at 19,000.
Yeah, I was like,
can I get a midwife up there?
Like, forget the elevation. Like, this is an intense trek. Yeah. So we, you know, for very good reason, we ended up canceling it. And,
that's a really good reason.
I flew over Kilimanjaro one time and got yelled at by the flight attendant as I, like, you know, jumped across the aisle because it was on the other side of the window. I'm like, they're like, sit down, you know, we're flying. I'm like, it's Kilimanjaro. Like, are you not excited about this? They're like, no, we fly over it every day.
I mean, you can go. So that's an amazing adventure, by the way, where you don't need any special skills or special equipment. I had my own hiking boots when I went, but I borrowed everything else. I didn't even own a Gore-Tex jacket. I mean, I grew up in Arizona. I didn't have this in Phoenix. But I borrowed everything I needed from friends and friends of friends. And so you don't need any special gear, equipment, skills. You know, if you can put one foot in front of the other, you can climb Kilimanjaro and you can, you know, tie on a safari. There's all these fun, amazing. I mean, look, there's amazing adventures to be found everywhere in the world, everywhere in the world. You just have to be creative and have an open mind.
So my last question is, you know, you were working on Wall Street, had a great career. You had what you just talked about. You had a heart condition that made it, this kind of lifestyle probably seem not possible or like the obvious choice. Like, what inspired you to live this life, this amazing life that you're living in the first place?
Well, so I will say that when I worked on Wall Street just for a little less than 3 years right out of grad school, and not to like turn my nose up at this by any means, but I had a strong like 5-figure income. So it wasn't 6 figures. It certainly wasn't 7 figures. So for people that are thinking like, oh, you worked on Wall Street, you must have like saved all this money. Like, I had a solid 5-figure income. So I didn't, you know, that's why I was like looking for sponsors for trips and things like that. So when I walked away from that job, I didn't feel like I was walking away from like, maybe if I could just like stick this out for a couple of years, you know, I'd have a nice little like nest egg to retire, because I was living in San Francisco. I had $70,000 worth of debt. And so when you're living in an expensive city with so much debt, like a 5-figure income, you are still like kind of like barely getting by with how high the cost of living is and taxes and everything else. And so it was easy for me to leave that job because I wasn't like raking in, like I didn't have this big like 6-figure income or anything like that. But I worked for a pharmaceutical company before that. And I did business development in Southeast Asia. So I covered Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, Philippines, and Indonesia. And that really gave me my like that taste for traveling and going to all those different countries and just mixing with the locals. Cause when you live over there, it's really different than just traveling there. And I just thought, God, there is a huge world out here. So I will say that when I got that Wall Street job, I kind of wanted to just get a job out of grad school that I felt like was as far from my comfort zone as possible. Something that seemed like when people say like, you worked on Wall Street, like that doesn't seem like you. That's exactly why I wanted that job. Cause I wanted to just like really stretch and be in a job that made me uncomfortable. So I'm really glad I did. It was a great experience and I loved the firm. I didn't love the job at all, but I did like the firm and loved the people that I worked with. But before that I had this travel experience that I really loved and I wanted to get back to that. And so I knew I needed to be in a job that would allow me the flexibility to continue to travel. And so I left there. Well, right after I left there, I went and I worked for Arnold Schwarzenegger in campaign finance during his campaign for governor of California. But like now I work as a keynote speaker. So I get paid to speak at conferences and that gives me the flexibility to still travel. But I want to give some advice to people because I know there's some people that are like, oh my God, I'm stuck in my cube all day long and I don't get, you know, I get my 2 weeks a year off. Well, I had to requested an unpaid leave of absence when I took time off to go to Mount Everest. That's when I was working in finance. And I didn't think they would ever say yes to me doing that, but I asked for it and I got it. You have to ask. You really have to ask. Don't be afraid to ask because no one's gonna punish you for asking to take time off for an adventure. And I think more and more employees value people who have had global experience and people who have a strong sense of intellectual curiosity and people who have, you know, learned about and experienced other cultures. So I think that is of value to employers these days. So I say like, do not be afraid to ask for an unpaid leave of absence if you want to take some time off, but don't feel like I've got this job. I can't ask. I can't go anywhere. I don't have enough vacation time. I mean, there's just, where there's a will, there's a way. There's always a way. I always thought I could never go to Mount Everest. I could never get the time off and I would never have the money. At the time, it's $30,000 a person. Well, it wasn't easy, but landed Ford Motor Company as a sponsor. And then after that, I was able to land other sponsors. So there's ways to do it. You guys don't give up on your dream. Don't give up on your dream because it's not convenient for someone else. And don't give up on it because you feel like you don't have time. Like you can figure it out. It might not be the timeline that you initially wanted, but that's okay. Life is about compromise. Life is about give and take. You don't get everything you want, right? And everything's a trade-off. So you can have your adventure eventually. It might not be exactly when you want it, but that doesn't mean you should give up on it.
100%. I tell a lot of people that for working remotely too, where it is so hard to find good people, recruit people. Like that is an expensive thing. So if someone is good, if they ask for a leave of absence or they ask to work remotely, like it might not be your ideal situation, but you know, just having like on the employer side, like I don't want to lose the person. And usually, right. Yeah. So usually so
this kind of works in our favor, this whole like quarantine shelter in place. Cause now you can be like, look, like I was already not in the office for 2 months and it was all okay. Right. I kept working and everything was fine. So I mean, this whole shelter in place thing could end up helping people who want to take time off.
Yeah. Not only have people like also a lot, so many companies have built the infrastructure for employees to work remotely that they never thought they would do. So everyone be really productive right now. So when you go back, you can just say, hey, I was way more productive at my home than in the office.
You're like on a Zoom call on the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro. You're like, hey, yeah, boss, I'm here. I'm on.
Yeah.
I'm on.
It's like the reverse virtual background, right? Like you're on the summit and you're having
like I got a fake, like an office environment behind me.
I saw a guy who created a virtual background, a video virtual background of him just like looking really thoughtful so that he can just leave the room and leave himself on for a conference call. So yeah, I mean,
that's so funny.
If you're creative, there is definitely a way to do it. So finally, everyone, you know, I highly recommend getting Allison's book On the Edge. I first came across you on a podcast while I was walking around Almaty, Kazakhstan, and I immediately downloaded the book on my Kindle and I finished it before I left. So fun fact, highly recommend that book.
Oh, thanks.
you're working on a documentary, The Glass Ceiling. When is that? How can people follow along?
The working title for my film is called The Glass Ceiling, and it's about the first female Sherpa to summit Mount Everest. Amazing story about this woman, Pasang Lamu Sherpa. She was, she grew up, couldn't read, couldn't write, couldn't speak the national language because she never got a chance to go to school because female Sherpas were supposed to stay home and cook and clean and take care of the men. And the men were the ones that were out doing the climbing. And this woman, Pasang Lamu Sherpa, had a dream to climb, but the government of Nepal wouldn't let her because they wouldn't let female Sherpas climb. So she fought the local government for equal rights for all women. And she broke through that glass ceiling and she tried three times unsuccessfully to get to the summit of Everest. Summited on her fourth attempt in 1993, became the first female Sherpa to do so, but sadly, she died on the descent, and she did not live to tell her story. So we want to tell her story. We want to get her story out into the world because it really does prove that regardless of race, gender, socioeconomic background, you can change an entire country if you just have courage, because that's all she had, and she changed things for a whole country. So you can check out, if you want to check out our trailer, it's online at theglassceilingmovie.com. So hopefully we'll have it finished by the end of this year, but, I think it's a cool story. And if you like adventure or mountains, it's a romance story. It's got a lot of twists and turns to it. So hopefully you guys will like it.
Can't wait. And everyone also follow her at Levine_Allison on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm terrible at Instagram and I really want to get better. And I remember you were so kind because we talked on the phone and you were like, you need to post more on Instagram. And I still have not figured that platform out. It kills me. I cannot.
To me, it's so simple for you. Everything you say is amazing and inspirational. And there are all these photos of you climbing big mountains. So all you have to do is marry the two. Just post those videos and say you're
cooking about that, and then I see a cute picture of my dog and I'm like, I'll just post this picture of Trooper because that's much better. So
stop doing the Trooper posts either, but
that's like on my list of things to work on during quarantine, is to get better about Instagram and learn how to be more efficient and offer more value on it. So that's on my list.
Cool. It's your next mountain you'll climb. So before I turn it over to Andy, what adventure is next for you? And besides social, is there any way other ways we can follow along?
I have a website at allisonlevine.com. So
cool. Well, it's about the time that I shut up and hand it over to Andy to ask everyone's questions. But first, Allison, I just want to acknowledge and thank you for the work you do and the inspiration you.
Thank you. So I want to thank you guys, Conrad and Andy, for what you guys do. I mean, to give the gift of adventure and to help people travel, to make travel easier and more accessible and more interesting. I mean, that truly is a gift to the world. That changes the world too. So we talked about technology, adventure, raising compassionate children, and a few kind words. I would say travel changes the world as well. It makes us more compassionate. It allows us to connect to one another, to feel connected to the world, to realize we are all one. And you guys do that. So what you are doing is changing the world. So thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And it is the mission behind what we do. Like, I think the more people travel, the more curious, the more compassionate, the more open-minded they are. And, you know, I think almost every single problem in the world comes from a lack of curiosity. So if you look at something you don't understand with fear or judgment or hate, as opposed to intrigue and interest, like, then, you know, that's how pretty much most negative things in society and most inequalities or conflicts happen. But thank you. But
of course,
you are, you're the epitome of determination and bravery of your expeditions. And, you know, like I said earlier, it's like not just the adventures you've gone on, but in being transparent and outspoken about the challenges and setbacks. And, so we can all learn from those valuable lessons. So thank you so much. You know, all your book and all the things you say have made me a better leader in my business and my family. So for that, thank you. Without further ado, I'll pass it on to Andy.
All right. So we have a really good mixed bag of questions, and we got time to go through a couple of them. So I'm going to start with the top voted one for tonight. And I mean, you said, I think, you know, something that is very, very true. We all believe it's really about the journey. Have you had any surprise pit stops on any of your journeys that like really stuck with you? It's, here's a little unexpected turn in the road that just made a lasting impression.
Yeah, you know, I will say one thing, like one trip that I went on by myself to climbing in Western China, and I like just booked the trip to this logistics company, and we ended up getting stuck. Like, we weren't able to travel out to the mountain on the day we were supposed to travel. And I ended up meeting these amazing women from the UK. And I was just there by myself, and they were a group that was traveling together. And they like, welcome. They're like, who are you here with? I'm like, oh, it's just me. And they're like, not anymore. Like, now you're part of our group. And so I was really grateful that we ended up getting stuck an extra day, because if we had left on the day that we were supposed to, I wouldn't have met these women. And so sometimes these delays, like, you're super annoyed that like, oh, I was supposed to go on this day and it didn't happen and whatever. And so I ended up meeting, and two of these women from that trip are two of my dearest friends that I stay in touch with, and I've been on many subsequent climbs with them since. So I always look at like when there's a delay, like there's something that's supposed to happen. Like the universe is making this happen for a reason. There's something good that will come of it. But I mean, I will say that, so that was like a, you know, it wasn't necessarily a detour, but it was just a delay, a travel delay. And just, I think anytime I've had something, like I got stuck in Antarctica one time. So I'd been there three times. And the first time I went there was to climb the Vincent Massif, which is the highest peak in Antarctica. Then I went out there another time for my South Pole trip, and then one other time to do the first ascent of this mountain called Hall Peak that never been climbed before. But the first time I went there, we got stuck for like days and days. We couldn't get out of there. It's really tricky. The weather has to cooperate in order for planes to be able to take off and land. The wind speed has to be below a certain speed, and the visibility, everything. So I remember just getting stuck in this tent, and there's nothing to do there, and just playing cards for days and days and days. And I think that really helped me prepare, like just the boredom, like there's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. And I think we were stuck for 5 or 6 days or something like that. And just sitting there playing cards with nothing to do. And so that, I mean, now when I look at this, I'm like, look, I got a whole house. Like I got TV, I got Netflix, I got internet, you know, I got, you know, Zoom. So much more entertaining. But I feel like, you know, every time there's been any kind of hardship. And again, Conrad, you asked this question, do you realize it in the moment, you know, what you're learning from it? It's always after the fact, like after the fact, anytime there's anything crazy or anything bad that happens, there is something to be learned from this. There is some silver lining, some benefit to almost everything.
Yeah. Let me ask a question that sort of came up. And you touched on this, I think, a little bit earlier on, and maybe also with what you're doing with the documentary, but like throughout all your travels, like how do you personally think about, you know, giving back to the communities that have let you experience what you've experienced as a traveler? And how do you do so?
Oh, okay. So I really do think about that for every single trip. I think, what am I? So there's the leave no trace, which is right. Like that's one thing. But in a sense, I want to leave something behind, something of value behind. And it's not something physical usually. I just try to do as much research as I can to figure out, is there anything we could do to leave a positive imprint here when we leave? So for example, one of my favorite climbs I've ever done, I highly recommend this, you guys, the Ruwenzori Mountains, which border the Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda. So these mountains are in Western Uganda. The mountains were closed for a long time because there was war between Uganda and the Congo. Don't mind that. But the rebels from the Congo were using these mountains as a staging area to invade Western Uganda. Well, long story short, these two countries signed a peace treaty, so everything was cool, and they opened up the mountains again for climbers. I went over there in 2005 to climb, and what I realized when I went there is that the only way to earn money in Western Uganda for the local people, the Bakonjo people, is to work in the Ruwenzori Mountains. They work as porters, trekking guides, high altitude cooks. And what I noticed immediately was that it was all men in these jobs. And so I asked the head of the local village and the head of the guiding service, I was like, hey, can we take women guide? Can we have women guides and porters on our trip? Because you have to take, like Kilimanjaro, you have to take local guides and porters with you because it's the only way to support the economy in this region. So I said, hey, can we get women guides and porters on our trip? And he was like, there are no women guides and porters in the Ruwenzori Mountains. And I was like, why not? He's like, it's taboo in our culture for women to go to the mountains. And I said, well, then how do they earn money? He's like, women cannot earn money. They're owned by men. And I was like, what are you talking about right now? And so I found out that women were owned by men in Western Uganda. So I ended up calling a meeting with the head of the local village and the head of the park service and the head of the guiding service. And I talked to them and negotiated with them. And I ended up getting them to allow me to take the first team of local women up into the Ruwenzori Mountains. And I went up with a couple of friends and we trained them to work as porters and trekking guides in these mountains. And so when they came down, they were able to get jobs. And it was the first time that local women had ever earned money in this area. So then I went back 6 months later to train more women in those jobs. And I went back a couple years later. So I've been back a bunch of times to train more and more women. I started a nonprofit to help these women get into these jobs so they can earn a sustainable living wage. Because before we did this, the only way women there could earn money was through prostitution. So they would tell me, we pray for war. We love war because when there's war, there's soldiers that come around. Because as prostitutes, that was the only way they could earn money to put food on the table. So for me, you know, it's important. Do your research. Figure out what are some problems in the community that maybe you could help solve. And remember, just because something's been done a certain way for years and years and years doesn't mean it's the best way to do things today or the best way to do things moving forward. And the only way that change happens in these communities that need help is when people ask questions. So it would be easy to just say like, oh, women don't go to the mountains because it's taboo. Oh, because it's culturally not acceptable. Okay, got it. No, you say, well, hang on. Why is it taboo? Like, why aren't women allowed in mountains? Why is it taboo? And they say, because we've always been told women. I'm like, well, who told you that? Well, our grandparents, our great grandparents, our parents, everybody. I'm like, okay, I know, but what's the reason? And nobody knew. Nobody knew. So for me, it was this light bulb moment of, oh my God, sometimes, you know, things are a certain way and nobody knows why. It's just old habit. And the only way change happens is when people ask questions. So when you guys travel, ask questions. Talk to as many locals as you can. Ask questions because you never know where one question might be able to really turn things around for people in that community.
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes back to Conrad's sort of point about curiosity, but I think you sort of nailed it on that. Like a lot of things that we accept as true are only true because we accept them. And right. The moment we don't accept them, they're no longer true. And, you know, I think like one of the real opportunities right now, the world we live in is the things that we don't like that are true in our world. Maybe now is an opportunity to shake it up and change.
I think there's great opportunity right now.
It starts
in America. We've got nothing but opportunity, but you have to be conscious and purposeful and proactive about creating those opportunities.
All right. Two more questions for you. One, everyone likes to talk about food. So I'm going to ask, you know, a very actionable question. What do you like to eat on the trail?
I like chocolate on the trail, off the trail, everywhere. Dark chocolate. It's got, you know, antioxidants in it. You got to be careful in certain cold places though, because certain things freeze. Like you can't eat your favorite Snickers bar or your Milky Way. Like a lot of times if you're going up a mountain or to Antarctica, those things are going to freeze. But on the trail, I like really good dark chocolate.
Awesome. Last question. I'm gonna wrap this up also in a thank you as well. So, so much of what this whole movement, you know, we're doing right now with travel from home is about is, you know, while we're, you know, quarantined in our house, while all of our routines have been appended, it's about still trying to find some joy and connection and like entertainment, you know, from the world of travel, even if travel right now is distinctly at home. And one of the questions that was really asked of you, and I think, you know, your outlook on stuff, like just watching the chat, like you could almost hear people light up through their own words, just responding to some of the things that you said. So, you know, as we're all going and sort of undulating between, this is okay, this feels really bad, this feels okay, shit, this sucks. Like, what advice can you give to just get people through the rough days, knowing that we don't know when this is going to end?
Yeah, so my advice to get through the rough days is to remember, like, and we talked about this a bit, one step at a time, you guys. You don't have to climb Mount Everest today. You just have to put one foot in front of the other, right? So that's all you have to do. And I would also go back to saying, like, you can be scared and brave at the same time. You can. Like, we are all going to get through this. So break your big, overwhelming task down into much smaller parts. And that's the other thing. Celebrate. This is what I think is really important. Celebrate your small wins. Celebrate those little milestones. Like when I was had to go to the summit of Mount Everest and I was like, holy shit, like I can't make it. It's too much. I stopped stressing out about the summit. I just shined my headlamp on this rock that was down the trail. And I was like, okay, I don't know if I can get to the summit, but I know I can get to that rock. So for right now, I'm just focused on getting to that rock. So I would get to that rock. And then once I got there, I was like, yes, I'm like, I'm awesome. I made it to this rock. Like maybe I can make it to the next little landmark. And I look for the next rock down the trail. And I made it to that one. Once I got to that rock, I was like, all right, look at that big ice boulder. Like I can make it to that. Like, I don't even know about this summit thing, but I think I can make it to that ice boulder and I'd make it to that. And I'd be like, yes, every time. So celebrate your small wins along the way, right? Stop stressing out about the summit. Just look at that rock that's down the trail. You can get to that rock. And once you get there, yes, celebrate, right? Cut yourself some slack. The other thing I really hope people do is get outside every day. You guys, you have to get outside. Go for a walk, a jog, a bike, whatever you do. Just a walk is great. 15 to 30 minutes a day. The air quality's never been better. You need the sunshine. The sunshine is the best way for you to absorb vitamin D. It is the most efficient way to get vitamin D. It's really good for your health. So that's the other thing. Get outside. And you feel, I feel like you're ready to start your day when you've done a brisk walk or something. You're like, yeah, like I got this. And then the last thing, you guys, don't forget, you might be by yourself, but you're not alone. You might be by yourself, but you're not alone. We are here. Everybody's here. We are all isolated, but we're not alone. There's a difference between being by yourself and being alone, and you are not alone.
I love it. That those are really, really awesome words, both I think to live by and also to close on.
Thanks.
Listen, I mean, so much of this, again, is trying to get outside. And, you know, for those of us that have been inside all day, just listening to you talk has been sort of our way of getting out and experiencing the world from, you know, some of the highest peaks and, you know, coldest places. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Of course.
It does like an absolute wonder for all of us. And we're all sort of,
you know, I'm so honored. You guys, thank you for spending this hour with me. I know it's an hour you're never going to get back. Our most valuable resource that we have is time. And you just gave me an hour of yours. And I'm so appreciative for that. So thank you for being a part of my world for the past hour. I appreciate you, you know, letting me be a part of your team today. So thank you.
Well, the reciprocal return on investment there is astonishingly high. So thank you. To everybody else, some quick final words. I think you just said it so well. You might be alone, but we're all here together. So two things for you. One is after this, Connor and I will be throwing just a little impromptu Zoom happy hour. I sent you all an email during this, so you should have a link there. But if you want to grab it real quick and copy and paste, it's sitting right here in the chat. We'll be hanging out, chatting about all sorts of different things. And then the last thing is, if this is your first time here with us, you know, with Travel From Home, everything we do is about this community. Everything we do next is really going to be whatever we need to keep our spirits high. So the best way we do that is through your feedback. So also just dropped in chat, I have a 90-second survey that helps us figure out what other great things should we do. And appreciate everybody taking that time. Allison, thank you. It was amazing having you. And to everybody out there, stay safe, stay at home. And until we can travel again, let's keep traveling at home. And see you all next time. Thanks again, Allison. You're the best.
Thanks.